Welcome to The Millionaire's Lawyer, where you'll hear leading professionals share expert advice on how to grow your business and sell it for maximum profitability. If you want to learn lawyer-proven strategies for building and exiting your business, then this is the podcast for you. Your host, J.P. McAvoy, is a business lawyer, college professor, and best-selling author who has been assisting clients start, grow, and sell their businesses for millions of dollars for over 15 years. Will yours be the next? Now here's your host, J.P. McAvoy.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of The Millionaire's Lawyer. I am thrilled to have you here with us, and I'm thrilled to have John Abenda sitting with me. Good friend, longtime, common colleague, as we assist clients to help them grow their businesses and their portfolios. Right, John? You want to tell the audience what you do?
Well, good morning. Hi, JP. It's great to be here. Always nice to see you. And thanks for the opportunity. So yeah, for the audience out there listening, JP and I have known each other and we've collaborated with several mutual clients for a number of years. There are also other professionals within the city that we work very, very closely, tax accountants and insurance providers, etc. So really the role that we try to bring when we're meeting with clients is to be able to take care of all of their wealth management needs, retirement, investment, will and estate planning, business needs, etc. And hopefully we can bring all the people to the table.
And that's during the life of the business or the business owner's business, but also beyond, right? So if we've had a client that's sold and you continue to manage on a go-forward basis as well, right?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. Having said all of that, I've been in the financial services industry since 1976.
That's actually back when they invented money, really. So I guess it was just before that, but yeah, but it's 76 when they invented money.
So just to let you know, I'm so old. When I went to school, there was no history. So I've been around for a little while. I've seen a lot of market trends come and go, etc. But one thing is irrefutable, and that is that we establish long-term relationships with clients built on trust and mutual respect.
And a long-term plan, right? This podcast is timely because I think we're seeing a little bit of market turmoil right now. And, you know, depending on this airs, we could be saying that again in the future. But I guess the markets are down a bit right now. And we talked offline before this about how, of course, as a planner, it's not the first time you've seen this and it's not the last. And you plan accordingly, don't you?
Yes, very much so. So really what we're seeing now, and depending on when this is aired, today is February 25th. So yesterday, the market, the Dow Jones went down in excess of 1,000 points, largely due to the coronavirus outbreak and the uncertainty that has caused in the market. So essentially, all of 2020's gains have been eradicated over the last day. I personally believe that it's a short-term downturn in the market. It's not going to be sunny every day, and that's something that we try to tell our clients. From time to time, you're going to get a storm. And what we're going through now is that storm. But if you have ownership of the greatest companies in the world, you're well diversified. Again, I think it's going to be short-lived and it provides tremendous buying opportunities for clients at this point. So 2019, as you saw, was a very strong year in the market.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing moves up in a straight line. So at some point, there's going to be a pullback. This is a great opportunity for clients to get in, pick up some great securities at sale prices.
Sale prices right now, right? Yeah, and as you say, this is a theme that, we've seen before, we've seen it play out before, and we'll see it play out again. But as you say, it's being disciplined, right? And working with a good planner. You know, as you and I talk about working with our common clients, obviously as a lawyer, I'm not involved in any of the decision making in that regard. I might help somebody sell a business and realize on the sale of that business. But then I turn to you and I say, make sure that we're safeguarding what has been earned for the present time and the future, right?
Certainly. And all of that starts on a solid foundation. So it's meeting with a client, finding out what it is that might keep them awake at night, what their short, medium, and long-term plans are. And it's no different than building a home. You know, you start with a blank sheet of paper, you start drawing in color, and at the end of the day, you have a blueprint. And that's really how we try to engage with clients, making sure that they're well looked after. But everything is predicated on what the client's short, medium, and long-term needs are.
And there you go from there. I mean, so when you're sitting down with somebody the first time, you're having that conversation with them. So we've got the short, medium, long-term goals identified. What does the ongoing engagement look like with you? You continue to manage over the course of the length of the relationship, which in many cases can be a long time. So you're watching the ebbs and flows along the way. and rebalancing, or at this time right now, we're saying there's a potential for a buying opportunity for some people. So are you engaging with them to suggest, let's get moving on things now? Like, how does that actually work for you on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, great question. So yes, as a financial planner, I stay in touch with all of my clients on a go-forward basis. The discussion isn't centered solely on investments either, because investments is only one spoke in the wheel,
right,
of the wealth management wheel. So we take a look at the client situation. If the client is married, if they're entrepreneurs, if they have children, then that morphs into a broader discussion around will and estate planning. If they're business owners, what does the exit strategy look like? Who are your advisors? So I like to work with my clients very closely. We tend to go to the dentist twice a year. We go to a doctor once or twice a year. We get our car serviced twice a year in the spring and in the fall. And we do that to be able to curtail any major problems. It's always struck me as odd that clients will take more time to book a vacation in Cuba than they will to take...
Yeah, to talk to their planner, but their money, their finances, yeah.
Their money, their finances, their retirement plan. What does retirement look like? Everybody wants to retire. Wonderful. But what are you going to do in retirement?
Yeah.
How are we going to fund it? Where are the best sources to take the income from? But over the years, I think the single biggest concern that my clients have expressed is, will I have enough in my retirement? Because we're seeing people live longer and longer. That's marvelous. So how do we fund?
Right.
What happens if they have to go into a long-term care facility that prices are going up daily? Where do we draw the monies from? So these are all discussions that we have with our clients. Not only do I get to know my clients, but I try to get to know their family as well.
Yeah, you know their lives. You know what's going on with them, right?
Yeah. Well, the better I get to know my clients, the more proactive I can be and the better advice I can provide. So it's not just the investment. It's establishing that relationship. And I tell my clients, and I don't mean to sound facetious when I say this, but or immodest in any way, but I tell my clients, I would like to be the number two dial on your phone right after 911. So whatever you need, give me a call. And over the years, that's worked out beautifully, because clients will call me and they'll say, John, my daughter is buying a home. Do you know someone who does drywall?
That's right.
So it's not just
it's an ability to understand what's going on with people and help them in whatever way. And that's the way we are oftentimes seeing clients or common clients, right? We're sort of advising on different ends of the spectrum, or I guess on various parts of the spectrum. I mean, you are that call, and you obviously have opinions in a lot of different areas for which you're more than prepared to share. One of those I'll ask you on right now is, well, actually, you brought in a few things here. So
sure.
It's nice to sit down and see something prepared for our podcast. So you brought in something that I think that is talking about 2020 and beyond, right? Or give us a sense, or what knowledge can you impart for the listener here today?
Well, first and foremost, let me say that we only have a few days left before the end of the RSP season. So if you want to make a contribution to be effective for the 2019 tax year, calendar year, those contributions have to be made by Monday, March the 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one. For the RRSP contribution limits, it's typically 18% of previous year's earned income, plus any pension adjustments, etc., to a maximum of $26,500 for 2019. For 2020, the limit has been set at $27,230. So those are just some numbers to throw up. A lot of the clients that I deal with are entrepreneurs, so they don't have a company pension plan. So quite typically, they can contribute to the maximum. And so these are things that we talk about. One of perhaps my favorite offerings that any Canadian government has ever presented to Canadians is the tax-free savings account.
Yes.
And for clients who are eligible, the tax-free savings account was introduced in 2009 by the Conservative government, Stephen Harper and the late Jim Flaherty. And it allows clients to put money aside, and none of the growth within the tax-free savings account is taxed. So it provides tremendous opportunities, and I'm a huge advocate of this offering. The one thing I don't like about the tax-free savings account, if I can be honest, is the name. Because when you think of tax-free savings account, people think it's just another bank account, and nothing could be further from the truth. So you can have a number of different assets held within the plan. In fact, the letter F in tax-free should have been flexible for the.
No, that's great. Yeah. So what are the types of things? What are the types you're suggesting people hold in their TFSA?
Well, it all depends on the client's needs and their comfort level. We have clients who will not venture away from GICs, guaranteed investment certificates. They don't want to see any loss of capital.
Right.
Sadly, though, interest rates are as low as they've ever been. So the returns that they're making on a guaranteed investment type of certificate are barely keeping pace with inflation, let alone if you're holding money outside of a tax-free or a registered retirement savings plan, the taxation eating into that return. But possibly the thing I dislike the most about a guaranteed investment certificate is the inflexibility of the product. So once you bought, let's say, a 1 or 2 or 3 year GIC, it's difficult to get out.
Right.
So if something were to happen unexpectedly, you don't have a lot of options. So GICs is one thing. I can offer mutual funds. So I work for the Royal Bank, but I'm not restricted to Royal Bank products. So if a client has a particular bend on a particular mutual fund, I can hold it. So we structure portfolios, again, to try and maximize growth, minimize risk and volatility, and we do a lot of that as well through dollar cost averaging. So rather than throw a bunch of money into the market, what's today, Tuesday? On Friday, for example, you put $100,000 into the market.
You would have been pretty disappointed if you put $100,000 in on Friday. That's right. Yeah.
You would have been very disappointed yesterday. Yeah. So what we try to do is encourage our clients to dollar cost average, and that accomplishes a couple of things. Number one, you're not trying to market time. So you eliminate the need to try and market time, because in the 43 years I've been doing this, I've never met anyone who can market time with any success. That's number one. Number two, it provides you the opportunity to take advantage of days like yesterday.
Are they dollar cost averaging, like accumulating in their account, and then you disperse it at different times, or do you have regular purchases? I guess it depends on the investment as well. I appreciate that. But
yeah, typically we have regular purchases. So we'll set up an investment strategy. And then just to make the math simple, let's say someone has $120,000. Rather than throw all of that money into the market all on one day, what we do is we'll dollar cost average over the course of a year. So we'll do $10,000 per month, perhaps every 2 weeks. So $5,000 every 2 weeks. So if, in fact, we do have down days like we had yesterday, and today appears to be another down day, your money tends to buy you more units on that day.
That's right.
So it also has the effect of smoothing out returns over a period of time, so you don't have these peaks and valleys. And I think that's what a lot of clients are nervous about. 2019 was a great year. 2018, not so much. 2020 got off to a very, very good start. Yesterday, the gains were wiped out.
Everything was given back. Yeah. What is the election? I mean, again, the U.S. election, how does that impact things, generally speaking? Because again, we can only do this all generally speaking, I appreciate, but
absolutely.
In an election year, is it supposed to be good or is it supposed to be bad? I can't remember how that works.
Typically, in an election year, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, in an election year, it's good. Now, I have my own opinions on what I think is going on in the States, but certainly the current president has been quite good for the economy.
Good for the economy. That's one thing you can say, certainly good for the economy. So that's one of the reasons why he's popular for people that are interested in the economy. So I imagine that the results of the election will also impact things, or at least prognosticators are suggesting it will, right? If Trump is reelected, it's probably going to be good for the markets. If he's not, who knows? Or is it anybody's bet, or is there people suggesting that it's going to actually be bad for the markets?
You never know what's going to happen tomorrow. Yeah. Certainly, if Trump is reelected, there's that stability. So people kind of know what to expect.
They know it'll continue to be as unpredictable, but the markets have reacted well to the unpredictability, right?
Well, they've reacted very, very well under his reign. If he's not reelected, then there's that air of uncertainty.
Yeah.
So I remember in 2016, the night of the election, I stayed up to watch the election results.
And that's a late night for you. Wow. Like,
it was a late night when you're as old as I am. Yeah, typically, you're in bed by about 6:30 at night. But I remember it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and then I switched to one of the channels to see how the markets were reacting.
Right, yeah.
And the futures were down tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was predicting
doom
and gloom. It was a disaster. By the end of business, that same day, the markets had gone through the roof.
Yep.
And they've done well since.
Ever since, yeah, it seems, yeah.
So whatever your personal take on the president it is, he has been good for their economy.
Good for the markets, yeah, good for the economy. So we just discussed coronavirus, we've talked elections. What else? Are there other things on the horizon? That I guess it's also, and this is what we said from the beginning, it's the flavor of the day, but you got to consider a long-term plan, right? Like, are there other things on the horizon that were, I guess, China, trade battles, I guess it might be one of the other things that is still a little unsettling, but we don't know.
Certainly, we don't know moving forward. So we have to base our decision on the information that we have today. I've always been a strong believer in slow and steady winning the race as it pertains to investments, as it pertains to anything.
Yeah.
Slow and steady tends to win the race at the end of the day. Historically, If a client has had a portfolio that consists of cash, fixed income or bonds, and equities or stocks, historically, let's say that's called a balanced portfolio. Now you can be a balanced growth or a balanced conservative, but typically if you have those three asset classes, it's considered a balanced type of portfolio. The historic returns on a balanced portfolio have been between 5 and 8%. Again, we're going to get years like 2019 where our conservative portfolios, we were seeing 13, 14, 15% mm-hmm. rates of return. Mm-hmm. In 2008, that same portfolio that did a 13% rate of return last year was down 3%. So the foundation has got to be strong. And when you're buying any type of investment, the first thing is buy quality. That's number one. Number two, diversify your holdings in things that are not positively related. Number three, review your portfolio periodically, like you would go to the dentist, like you would get your car serviced, like you wash the windows of your house twice a year in the fall and in the spring. Review your portfolio periodically. Number four, let the markets do what the markets do, and that is go up and down, but markets don't disappear. So it's not going to be sunny every day. We are going to have clouds from time to time. From time to time, we're going to have a storm. But if you build your portfolio the way you build your real estate on a solid foundation, when that storm comes, yes, you might break a pane of glass, you might lose a couple of shingles, but your structure is in place.
Right.
And then what we do is we meet with clients regularly throughout the year just to make sure that there is nothing in the offing that, you know, would have adverse effects on the client's financial.
I don't know what the situation looks like. Yeah. So that's great. Put a plan into place and work the plan, really. So part of it's the investments. Another part of things that we work on together, obviously, is an estate plan, looking at what people's estate situation looks like. Obviously, as the attorney, I'm oftentimes asked to prepare a will. And that's one of the first questions you're asking clients, isn't it, as well? Make sure they've got something in place. We've both seen the results of not having proper planning in place and proper estate matters taken care of. It's a lot more work for the advisors. It's obviously not the best situation for the client. How do you steer them towards that? Or what's your conversation like with them on that front?
The first thing, whenever I meet with a client, I will put the investment statements to the side. Historically, as I said, a balanced type of approach has yielded a 5 to 8% rate of return. Those numbers are irrefutable. Great. We know that. Let's put it aside. Now let's talk about what's really important. Tell me about you. Tell me about your business. Tell me about your family. The moment a client says, well, yes, I'm married. I have three children. Boom. A light goes on. Great. This discussion now has to veer towards, well, in estate planning. Do you have a will? Do you have valid powers of attorney? If you're an entrepreneur, chances are you're probably going to build the bulk of your wealth through your corporation. Do you have a corporate will? And by having a corporate will, it just helps circumvent estate administration taxes, better known as EAT, obviously.
EAT, yes, I like that.
That's a great acronym. That's how the conversation evolves. Clients will tell me about their family. They may have a child who's a spendthrift. So again, the conversation now expands. How do we protect that child against themselves? They may have a child with mental or physical limitations. So again, we address those symptoms. So again, it's much, much, much more than just, oh, you have $50,000 to invest? Great. Give me your check. And if you have a question about will, estate, or tax planning, or retirement planning, go talk to somebody else.
Yeah.
No, we really do try to provide an integrated wealth management approach to every client.
Yeah. So looking at their situation, tailoring things to their situation over the course of their business life, for their working life, and throughout their retirement as well, right? So obviously very important, and to make sure that's being considered from all angles. Now, you have these conversations and much more regular than myself as the lawyer will. As a lawyer, I am oftentimes, I'm almost reactive, right? I'm asked to implement a corporation, or I'm asked to sell a corporation. I'm asked to implement a will. So we're almost reactionary. We're not doing the proactive work that you are, and perhaps we should be. We frankly just don't have the time. Our businesses aren't set up the same way. So it's really effective to work with a planner, with somebody such as yourself that is always watching out for and knows how to introduce the right element at the right time. How do you work with other professionals, you know, as you're providing that level of service to the clients? You know, you and I know what it's like. I'm asking it for the audience because you and I have done this together for common clients. But yeah, when are you introducing in that conversation? How do you stay involved through that? Or I guess, how do you see the results of the work that is being done by other professionals?
That's a wonderful question. Whenever I'm meeting with a client, I want to know as much about this client, their family, their professional advisors as I possibly can. When I know who their advisors are, I can reach out. I want to make sure that we're working in accordance with what is in the best interest of the clients. There's no sense my recommending something and all of a sudden the tax advisor says, this isn't going to work. So understanding who their professional advisors are, it just helps to build and surround that client with a team that's going to look after them, their family, their children, their grandchildren.
Yeah, have all the situations taken care of. And it helps that, I mean, and it's not a coincidence. People, good people find each other. Good people work together. You're finding good clients. You have good clients that like to work with you. And then likewise, the professionals they turn to. I'd like to think I'm one of them as well. We do a lot with, I think, a couple of common accountants as well.
Yes.
And I guess that the accountant is a little bit more like you, where there is a regular touch with the accountant. By the regular touch, I mean taxes are being done on an annual basis.
Absolutely.
So the accountant is going to be involved more on the financial front. But really, maybe just even once a year, you're the most common thread or you're the most frequent touch, aren't you, with that client?
For the most part.
Yeah,
for the most part. So I like to consider myself like a quarterback of the team and then direct that client to the respective professionals if they don't already have those relationships in place. I've had the good fortune of working with you. And again, we have some tax advisors that we've had long-term relationships with that have been spectacular in helping my clients. And so those relationships are sacrosanct to me. When you get to know the advisors, again, you can just better plan and help your client. And I think ultimately at the end of the day, that's really what you want to do. You want to make sure that all bases are covered, all the professionals are brought to the table to help that client and their family.
It's so true. And as the lawyer, I mean, a lot of times people are afraid to speak with me. They're afraid that it's going to cost them a lot. I think lawyers have we can insert our lawyer joke here because it's a lot of reasons why people are afraid to speak to their lawyer. And of course, I welcome the contact, but I also say to them, make sure that you've got other members of your team that you feel more comfortable with that I can have a dialogue with as well in the event that it's needed to make sure you're being taken care of. For these people, I think they're probably a little less reluctant to reach out to you. You've established that. You've made it known that that's part of your practice. It's probably also the way you're compensated, right? It's probably also because, again, as a lawyer, people are afraid that every time they call me, it's going to cost them something.
Right.
And I don't think it's quite the same with regards to the way that you work with people. Can you talk about what your compensation looks like or what people can expect on that front as well?
Certainly. So when a client comes to see me, I'll do the retirement plan, help the client chat about their estate plan, the succession plan, if they're entrepreneurs, et cetera, the investments strategies. So it's not that I present them a bill at the end of the day. I'm a commissioned salesperson with the Royal Bank of Canada, and I get paid accordingly. But all of that aside, the most important thing for me is to make sure that my clients and their family are well looked after. So I'll chat to my clients anytime about anything. And as I said before, I want to be the number two dial on their telephone. Whenever something comes up, give me a call. I might not be able to help you, but I have sufficient contacts in the city where I might be able to direct you so that you can get that help. So for me, that's very, very important. At the end of the day, regardless of whether the client buys a guaranteed investment certificate, a mutual fund, leaves the money in cash, for me is irrelevant. If you chase the dollar, you're not doing your clients any favors. Don't worry about chasing money. And I tell this to young advisors all the time. Look after your client's needs. The money will look after itself.
Yeah, everything else takes care of itself. That's right. Making sure you're focused on the right things. Focus on the right things and all the right stuff gets taken care of.
Absolutely. Ottawa is a very small city, as we know. It's not a Toronto, a Vancouver, or Montreal. You can't hide in the weeds in Ottawa. So your reputation precedes you. And what I tell young advisors is whatever you do, do not ruin your name or your reputation because everybody in the city will know about
it. Yeah, everybody will know about that. And that applies across really any place.
I mean, any
reputation, you know, takes a lifetime to establish and a minute to destroy. So obviously you got to be careful with that. That's great. A great way to look at things. So let's talk, as you say, young advisors, but say for a young John Abenda, though, what kind of advice would you have given to yourself 30 years ago?
Make sure that you're talking to the client about all aspects of a client's wealth management needs. Don't just look at the investment because again, the investment portion is one spoke in a wheel. Get to know your clients. Treat your clients as if you were treating a guest at your home. So when a client comes in, offer them a glass of water, offer them a coffee, offer them the juice, make them feel at ease. It's no different. Like when a client comes into the bank and they come to see me, they have no idea what I do for the most part. So there's a lot of trepidation, a lot of nervousness. And really, what I want to do is make sure that when that client leaves, they're comfortable. They understand all of their options. They're comfortable with the recommendations I give so that they know what's going to happen. Try not to talk over the client. Don't try to impress the client with how smart you are. You know, get away from acronyms. TFSA, GIC, RRSP, we use these interchangeably. But for a goodly number of clients, they have no idea what those acronyms stand for. So please don't try, you know, to impress the client. Break it down so that even a five-year-old can understand what it is you want to do. Out of 100 clients, you might get 98 like that. You may only get one or two who are very, very technical. Wonderful. Then that's great. That's another discussion altogether. Then you can impress them all you want. But for the vast majority of clients, make sure that you keep things straightforward, simple to understand.
Yep.
Map out their options. The other advice that I would give to any young advisor.
Not a young advisor to you, because I know from our history. Tell a story about how you got into the business. I think people would be interested to learn that. As I say,
sure.
For the listeners, I'll let you tell a story. But I mean, it's an endearing way to hear about how you got into the business and how it's grown since.
Hello, podcast friend. I hope you're enjoying this episode of the show. We sure appreciate having you here. I'd like to take a minute to invite you to download a free digital copy of my best-selling book, The Millionaire's Lawyer, Grow and Sell Your Business. It's available for download at jpmcavoy.com. That's jpmcavoy.com. Hope you enjoy the book, and thanks again for joining us on the podcast. Now, back to the show.
So, I'm the son of immigrant parents. My parents came from Italy in the mid-50s. They opened up a small grocery out of the front living room of our home. So from a young age, from when I was 4 years old, my sister and I have been involved with the public. The business went quite well. My parents were successful. They had bought real estate. They expanded the business. They built a supermarket. At age 50, my dad wanted to retire. So retired, sold the supermarket to a very, very well-known Italian family in the city who have gone on to have tremendous success in the food business. So he was retired, dabbled in real estate, couldn't really stay retired. So he opened up another small little business that was adjacent to Bank of Nova Scotia. I had gone to Ottawa University, completed my first year. I was going to become a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So it was May or June. I'm working the cash register at this small business that my dad had. And the manager from the Bank of Nova Scotia would come in every night to buy fruits and vegetables. So I was serving her on cash and I'll never forget her. Her name was Miss Marcellus. She's since passed, unfortunately. So I'm serving her on cash, and I said, Miss Marcellus, is there a job at the bank? I'd like to get a job at the bank. She looked at me and she said, well, what is it you'd like to do? I said, well, I'd like to be a cleaner. I want to come into the bank and be a cleaner because my dad wasn't paying me. And so what I wanted to do was do my shift at the store, go to the bank at night, clean the bank, mop the floors, clean the desks, etc. And she said, well, why don't you give me a curriculum vitae and I'll see what I can do. She helped me put something together. Long story short, they came back to me about 2 weeks later and said, look, rather than being a cleaner, why don't you, take a job at the bank? The pay was $6,800 a year, which was a tremendous amount of money for someone who was making zero.
Zero money, yes.
So I went to my parents and I said, look, here are my intentions. I'd like to get a job at the bank. I'll work for a year. I'll make my $6,800 because I want to fund my own tuition. I don't want you to pay for my university tuition. Much to their chagrin, they acquiesced. I was a little bit headstrong. Anyway, I started working at the Bank of Nova Scotia in 1976. Then I just progressed from there. I was with Scotia Bank for a number of years. And then I went to another major financial institution where I was there for 22 years. And the last number of years with the Royal Bank.
And your territory's grown, hasn't it? I mean, we're talking about some of these early days where you used to cover all the milk runs as well, right?
It was incredible. When I started at Scotiabank, I was with the bank for 6 months, and then they transferred me, my first transfer. They came to me on a Friday night, and they said, John, we're pleased to announce that you've been promoted, but you have to relocate. And having lived at home all my life, that wasn't
good sitting. Italian boy too. Yeah. That's right. It's hard to take the boy out of the home.
Sure, that wasn't sitting too well with me. And I said, "Look, before I say yes or no, is it within commuting distance?" And they said, "Oh, absolutely." And I said, "Okay, then I'll take the transfer." Where am I going? And they said, "A town called Renfrew. Do you know where it is?" Oh, of course I know where it is. I've been there a million times, which was a flat out lie. I'd never been to Renfrew in my life. So my girlfriend, who was now my wife at the time, on Saturday, we left Ottawa and it was about an hour and a half or almost a 2 hour drive to Renfrew because this was before the new highway went in. So it was a much longer trip. Yeah. So that was my first experience out of town, but I've covered territory from Sault Ste. Marie, from Ottawa, as far away as Sault Ste. Marie. I had great clients in the Sioux, Sudbury, North Bay. I've dealt with a lot of lottery winners throughout my career.
That's right.
The single biggest lottery winner was in the North Bay area. So I've had the pleasure of meeting with people from all over, but my career has been in Ottawa.
Yeah, Ottawa based, but it extends as I know. I mean, obviously beyond that, and it's by virtue of your success as well. I mean, you can see the way that you are, the way that you do business, right? And like we spoke about earlier, good begets good, doesn't it? Good people come as a consequence and your business grows. And that's like-minded for any business owner. Same thing can actually occur. It probably occurred back in the day from your father's grocery store.
It was a wonderful experience because throughout my life, I've always dealt with people. And that there is nothing more beautiful than having those relationships. Money comes and goes. Those friendships stay. And it's terrific. And again, I try to counsel advisors who are getting into the business or who have been in the business for a while. Good or bad, be consistent so people know what to expect from you. But don't ruin your reputation. If you say you're going to do something, do it. So again, make sure that you're looking after the client's best interest before you put your best interest forward. It's as simple as that. I was asked to speak at Algonquin College a few weeks ago. A friend of mine delivers the Certified Financial Planning course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I used to do that as well. I was invited to be a guest speaker. So I went in and probably 25, 30 people in the classroom, all aspiring or most of whom are aspiring to be certified financial planners. And they said, what's the key to success? Treat people the way you would like to be treated. I mean, it sounds so cliche, but there's nothing more true than that. Treat people like they are guests in your home. Make them feel at home. Put them at ease. Don't try to impress them with your technical knowledge because they'll shut down. And you don't want that. Get to know your clients. So again, the better informed you are about their circumstances, the more proactive you can be, the better advice you can provide. The analogy I make is this. If you walk into a doctor's office, you've never met this doctor, you sit down, and the doctor immediately pulls out a prescriptions pad and says, okay, I want you to take...
Yeah, here's what you need, exactly.
Here's what you need, without ever having chatted with you. You know, what are the symptoms? How do you feel? Have you had this before? What's your experiences been? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Be very careful of advisors who immediately go to an investment solution without talking to you about your family, your retirement. You know, what does retirement look like? As I said before, how are we going to fund it? Where do we draw the sources of income? Do you have a will? Do you have powers of attorney? A lot of the pushback has been, as you mentioned, well, drawing up a will is expensive. So I'm going to go with one of these $39.
The will kit or something like that.
The will kit. Well, that's probably okay if you have $50 in the bank, you rent an apartment, and you have a cat. But if you have a family, you worked all of your life to establish your assets and grow those assets, and a lifetime of prudent savings can quickly become undone by not having a properly formed estate.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as a lawyer, frankly, wills really are a loss leader. It's not like, for the most part, lawyers are out there looking to do the wills. We get paid a lot better when people don't have a will. And I say that to people, you know, you want to have things in place. You want to have your planning in place because, as I say, it's going to be more expensive if you don't. And frankly, it's going to be a lot more headaches for people that are left to deal with the mess or clean up the mess. So obviously, it makes good sense to put something like that into place. That's just good plain advice. As is, you know, do unto others as you'd have done to yourself, right? I mean, that's great advice. And that's just good business is the same thing, where you do business the way you want others to treat you in a business setting as well. We've learned that many, many times over, and we grow our businesses that way as a consequence, don't we?
Yeah. You know, you have to get down to the grassroots. You know, it's that thinking of, again, making sure that the client is well looked after. If they don't have a particular advisor, bringing someone to the table, using your circle of influence in order to be able to help that client and their family. They'll never forget it. Yeah. They'll never forget it. And again, having grown up with parents who were entrepreneurs, I know the struggles that they go through. Immigrants, I know the struggles that they faced. So I'm very sensitive to things like that. and making sure that all of our clients are well looked after.
Everybody's well looked after.
Absolutely. Yeah. Where my office is currently at the Billingsbridge Plaza, the demographic in that area is a little bit more mature. So we have a lot of clients who come in to see us. Maybe they're at the stage now where perhaps their spouse has passed. The house is too big. They want to move into a retirement facility, but the cost is going through the roof. How do we fund it? So they may sell the house. You know, we invest the money on their behalf, help them set up a monthly stipend, for example, to supplement whether it's old age or Canada pension or government pensions. So really looking after the clients, all of their needs.
Looking after all their needs. Yeah, just that's just it. So if for people that are listening, interested, want to know more, want to find out perhaps how to work with you, what's the best way to get in touch with you? What's the best means of contacting you or reaching out?
Certainly. My phone number is 613-564-2004. My office is at the Royal Bank at the Billingsbridge Shopping Plaza. My email is john.abenda@rbc.com. And for clients who are looking for a second opinion on investments or the holdings that they currently have, I would be happy to do that. There is no cost to the client. I just want to make sure that the clients are on solid footing. One of the things that I've seen throughout my career are investment strategies that are much too aggressive, much too aggressive. And clients end up getting hurt. And there's no need to be that aggressive. Again, historic numbers have been 5 to 8%. If we want to add a little bit of octane, consider it an accent color on a wall. So again, your structure is your structure. Big, boring, blue chip, well-diversified, that's your foundation. Now, if you want to have an accent piece, wonderful. Why don't we take 5 or 6 cents out of every dollar and we'll allocate it to that accent wall. Today's in color might be orange. Next year, it might be blue. But knowing that we haven't thrown all of your money into that accent piece, in the event that thing falls out of favor.
Yeah, very much so, because it certainly can. That's great advice there. So, appreciate the contact details. We'll put that in the show notes as well for anybody listening. Sure. Or if you happen to be driving, you'll be able to see that. And feel free to reach out to John, obviously, if you want to discuss any of these issues. John, a couple of other things. I want, and I know you well, so I want to insert some color into this conversation as well.
Sure.
Because tell the listeners about some of the other things you like to do for fun, some of the things that occupy you on a regular basis, because you may recognize this voice or this name from other spheres as well, John. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I'm also a professional musician. And JP is a bass player. I'm a piano player. I've been doing music all of my life. It's my absolute passion. And I've played with various bands throughout the city. I've had the good fortune of playing with tremendous musicians. I've done some studio work, some recordings, some radio and television jingles, etc. So it's great. You meet people from all walks of life. I've been very, very fortunate. The bands that I've played in would do mostly white-collar type gigs. And the professionals I have met through music is mind-boggling. I've met thousands and thousands and thousands of people. I've performed in wedding bands, so I've played for a lot of weddings. And then, you know, coincidentally, I was playing for the children of the people that I had originally played for. It was marvelous. And I know you're a bass player and you're still actively involved.
Oh, very heavy in the music scene as well. So it's nice to be, as you say, out gigging from time to time as well. It's a lot of fun to do, obviously.
Yeah. And you know what? Medical professionals will tell you that music is one of the most therapeutic things for people who may be suffering an ailment. Play music. If you have young children, play music. Expose them to the art. There's nothing more beautiful than music. And here's one thing I tell people. See, music is the beautiful uniter. You can have 10 people from all parts of the world, none of whom knows each other, none of whom speaks the same language. But you put them in a circle and you put sheet music in front of them. And all of a sudden, they're conversing. They're interacting. It's marvelous.
Yeah, universal language. It really is, isn't it?
It really is. It's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I encourage parents to, certainly if you have children, enroll them in music programs.
Yeah, get people involved in music. Well, maybe we'll have you write the new jingle for the Millionaire's Lawyer. We've got a great lead into the show right now, but maybe we'll have John work on some of that, perhaps maybe even have him perform it on some future session.
Hey, listen, speaking of which, coincidentally, I was asked by a VP of a financial institution if we could do a song. So I played in a 10-piece band. Horns, yeah. Professional singers, et cetera, et cetera. And they wanted a song for their national conference. So we went into studio, we recorded something. They loved it. ran it all the way up the line. They were going to use it. And then they came back and they said, well, we can't really use it because, you know, copyright infringement, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'd be happy to write a jingle if you want me to.
There you go. Stay tuned to The Millionaire's Lawyer. We may have a new jingle in the next little while. John, this is fantastic. I really appreciate your time today. I like to end each episode with one thing for people listening to take through the rest of their day, perhaps through the rest of their week. It doesn't have to be related. It could be a recipe, for crying out loud. I know you're a great chef as well, but one thing that you want to impress upon people that might be listening right now, perhaps brighten their day or make their day better and the world a better place because of it.
Sure. Tomorrow was promised to no one. We have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. If you have children, go home. Hug your children. Tell them you love them. If you have a partner, tell them you love them. Again, tomorrow is uncertain. Enjoy every second with your children, your mother, your father, your grandparents, whomever. To me, that's the most important thing in life. And you will be richer than Croesus if you have those good relationships. Cherish every moment.
Cherish every moment. There you go. Well said, John. Thanks very much for being here today. Thanks
very
much
pleasure.
For being on The Millionaire's Lure. I look forward to hearing what the future jingle sounds like and all the things that you have to bring with it.
Thank you so much. Been a pleasure. Thanks, JP.
Thanks for listening to The Millionaire's Lawyer. Please subscribe and rate on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. To get your business millionaire assessed and to access the wide variety of resources that we offer in addition to this podcast, go to jpmcavoy.com. That's jpmcavoy.com.